pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. This is the America News Network.
If cholesterol, high blood pressure, angina, atherosclerotic plaque, or stroke are a concern for you or your loved one, or you want to strengthen your heart, increase stamina, and promote overall cardiovascular health, then join the Heart Technology team. Heart Technology, Linus Pauling's recommended vitamin C therapies, is the answer to your concern. Don't wait until it's too late. For more information and to order, call Dennett Daniels at 1-800-205-6245. Heart Technology, it's natural, it's effective, it's inexpensive, and it's guaranteed. 1-800-205-6245.
For the finest in home security, you want Fine Line Security, a family-owned business. They install, service, and repair any CCTV system, including DVRs. Free estimates are available. Free security evaluations, including existing systems, emergency repairs, and loaner equipment. Call Scott at 303-550-8202. They also have lease options available for CCTV security. Always professional, neat, and excellent workmanship. Home automation wireless solution for doors and driveways also available. 303-550-8202. Fine Line Security.
Whether you're in automotive, sporting goods, hardware, health, wellness, electrical, electronics, construction, carpet cleaning, legal, or animal care, and offer exceptional customer service and provide quality services or goods, you're honest, reliable, and professional. If you have a business, we have the customers. Let us put you in touch with our loyal, supportive, and dedicated listeners today. They're waiting to hear from you. It's inexpensive. It's effective. Call KHNC at 1-800-205-6245.
Well, good morning. Dr. Stan back here at the American Freedom Network, and certainly we have an interesting program with Bob Schottmeyer this morning. We're going to be talking about the fact that there was prior knowledge of the September 11th attack, and the government very intentionally, or at least certain elements within the government very intentionally, did nothing to stop it. Now, I personally know that's true because Willie Brown, the mayor of San Francisco, announced the day after the attack that he had been notified the evening before the attack and advised not to fly the following morning. Now, the article appeared one time in the San Francisco Chronicle and then deleted from all subsequent editions on that day. I actually personally called the press secretary for Willie Brown, who confirmed the story. Willie Brown had been notified by some consultant not to fly the following day. There was going to be danger. It would be dangerous for him to fly. What's really so interesting is that today, Willie Brown doesn't remember the story. Bill Gertz of the Washington Times wrote an article. We have it. It was in July. It appeared in the Northwest Airlines stewardess website and basically talking about Operation Bojanka, the plan to hijack planes and crash them into the World Trade Center, the Sears Tower in San Francisco, in Chicago, the Transamerica building into the Pentagon. Now, they were already talking about hijacking planes and flying them in. And subsequently, I have the article, but subsequently when we talked to Bill Gertz about it, he doesn't remember ever writing the article. Isn't that strange? Well, is it possible that we have not been told the truth about what happened that day? Is it possible that six or seven of the hijackers are alive and well over in the Middle East? You can check that out on the Internet, and that has been well known for a long period of time. And I'm not quite sure how they could have died at that day and then not be dead. But there's so many incredible stories. And so this indeed is an incredible story of a gentleman who, for one reason or another, came to believe there was going to be an attack on the United States and was able to determine fairly well what it was going to be. But the most important part of his story is, as he began to research this after the attack, it became so obvious that the government, or at least people at key positions of government, knew the attack was coming, knew where the attack was going to be, and nothing was done to stop it. Why would that be? Why weren't people fired as a result of it and held responsible? Bob, thanks so much for being with us again.
Well, you're welcome, Stan. You want me to start?
ahead and pick the story up.
Okay, the book I have written is called Prior Knowledge of 9/11, and it's kind of a double entendre in terms of the prior knowledge was actually the fact that I had known about this attack in February 11th, 2001, when I was flying from San Francisco out to New York. I'd just come in from Narita Airport in Japan the day before, had a magazine on the Al-Qaeda terrorist, and I was reading the magazine going out to New York. And just to give you a kind of heads up, not only did I figure out all the details of this attack, I figured out within plus or minus 1 week when it was going to happen. And I actually had three different ways you could estimate the timing of the attack. And after I took that information to the FBI, to the 9/11 Commission, to the Joint Inquiry Committee of the House and the Senate, and both the FBI and the Joint Inquiry Committee gave me letters that said, or at least the Joint Inquiry Committee gave me letters that said they didn't think I was at fault, that they thought the CIA or the FBI had as much information as I had, and I should not feel like I should be blamed for this attack.
Well, they had all of the information, but of course the Joint Commission never brought that out in their report. They did not point out the fact they knew exactly what was going to happen and did nothing to stop it.
Even worse than that, they were hiding major areas to make sure that the American people, particularly the 9/11 Commission, and even the Department of Justice, the Inspector General, was hiding important information. They were hiding the name Ali Safan. Safan was the lead investigator on the coal bombing. And what the 9/11 Commission and the FBI or the DOJ IG report seemed to say was that the CIA did not share information with the FBI. But when you know about Ali Safan and you add that in, you add him into the story, you realize that Safan had made request after request, official request, to the CIA to ask about any meeting in Kuala Lumpur and about this person, Walad Benitesh, who Safan thought had been the mastermind of the coal bombing.
No,
and the CIA had photographed every single person.
Could you tell people what happened in Kuala Lumpur about the meeting that was held?
Yeah, there was a meeting in between January 5th and January 8th, 2000. And the meeting was a high-level Al-Qaeda planning meeting. And can you imagine this? The meeting was actually originally set up to plan the attack on the World Trade Center. Had nothing to do with the coal bombing. But on January 3rd, the attack that the Al-Qaeda terrorists were trying to carry out against the USS Sullivan's failed. So they sent people over to that meeting, and one of the persons they sent to the meeting was a guy called Fahad Al-Kuzo. And Kuzo was taking the money that had been left over from the attack on the Sullivan's, which failed because the boat sank. It was too heavy. And he was trying to give that money to a person called Walad Benitesh. And he flew into Bangkok, got stuck in Bangkok. They wouldn't let him proceed on to Kuala Lumpur. And on the 8th of January, when the meeting ended, Walad Benitesh flew from Kuala Lumpur to Bangkok. And if you can imagine this, Khalid El-Mihdhar and Nawaf El-Hazmi were sitting right next to him on the airplane. And the CIA had photographed all these people at this meeting. There were 12 people. They knew they were all longtime Al-Qaeda terrorists, knew they were planning additional attacks, never bugged the meeting, let them all walk away to carry out the attack on the coal 9 months later. And the hideous thing of it is when the CIA realized in October of 2000 after the coal bombing that they had photographed these people and they re-identified Walad Benitesh after having been at the meeting, and the FBI was getting involved, the FBI kept asking the CIA, what information have you got on any meeting in Kuala Lumpur, and what information have you got on this guy, Walad Benitesh? The first time that happened was in November of 2000, and Safan sent an official request to the Yemeni CIA station. That's where the attack on the coal had taken place. And even though the CIA had these photographs, the Yemeni station said that they had no information at all on any of this. Now, here's what's even more amazing. So when Safan, FBI agent Ali Safan, head of the coal bombing investigation, asked the Yemeni station and was told there was no information, he then requested the same information.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of The Green Herb.
All of God's people have a ministry, and it's a trick of our enemy to keep God's people sick and worn out to hinder their ability to minister. We are often judgmental toward people who are addicted to booze, cigarettes, and drugs. But we at the Green Herb have found that most of God's people are unknowingly addicted to the two most addictive products in America, sugar and soda pop. If you have a sickness or disease, or if you're just tired a lot, the Green Herb has an herbal product that is formulated just for you, and it's just $15.95. Come by the Green Herb, located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB. That's 888-765-4372. Or go to our website, www.thegreenherb.com, and be sure to listen to The Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution.
Worship and Warfare, Holy Places and In His Hands. Three praise and worship CDs now available through Voice of Many Waters Ministry. Call 1-800-205-6245 or check it out on the web, www.voiceofmanywaters.org. Each CD is $15 plus $3.50 shipping and handling. Call 1-800-205-6245 or www.voiceofmanywaters.org.
Well, Dr. Stan here at the American Freedom Network, and our guest this morning, Bob Schellmeyer. We're talking about his book on 911, and of course, what he really found out is the CIA knew who all these people were. They knew about this meeting held in January of 2000. They knew who attended. They had pictures of these people. They knew what they were plotting and did nothing about it. We know that they had advanced knowledge of the bombing of the coal. In fact, there was one very highly placed government official who said, do not put the coal in port at Yemen. It'll be blown up. If you want to refuel it at sea. You can do that. But they refused to do that. The Navy put that ship in there knowing it was going to be attacked. That's what's so unconscionable at the highest levels of our government. Somebody, of course, was promoting this or allowing this whole terrorist movement to proceed. But you go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, so the in November, he'd contacted Safan, the FBI agent who was in charge of the coal bombing, had contacted Yemen, the CIA station, and was told there was no information on any meeting in Kuala Lumpur or anybody called Walad Benitesh. Well, Safan had provided a passport photo of Walad Benitesh that he'd gotten from the Yemeni authorities, and he gave it to the CIA. And that photograph apparently went back to the CIA, and the CIA compared that photograph with the people that they had photographed at the Kuala Lumpur meeting and realized that they had photographed Walad Benitesh at that meeting. Now, at the same time they did that, the photograph was given to a person called the CIA-FBI joint source. This was on December 16th, 2000, and he absolutely identified Benitesh as a high-level person inside al-Qaeda. And here's what's most amazing. So if you look at the DOJIG report, it says right after that, CIA personnel overseas, or overseas personnel, ask the Bin Laden unit for the photographs of Benitesh and Khalid al-Mihdhar taken at Kuala Lumpur. And it doesn't say who those people are, but I found out that those people were the Yemeni station. And the Yemeni station asked for the two photographs of Benitesh and of Khalid al-Mihdhar, and they were given to the joint source on January 4th, 2001. And the joint source immediately identified Benitesh from the photograph taken at Kuala Lumpur. That meant on January 4th, the CIA had absolutely positive information that the meeting had been held in Kuala Lumpur, that the mastermind of the coal bombing had been at that meeting with both Khalid al-Mihdhar and Naref al-Hazmi actually planning the coal bombing. Now, you'd think the CIA would race out and give that information to the FBI. They didn't. Apparently, the CIA thought if this went to the FBI coal bombing investigators, it might end up in the newspapers, and the CIA would look bad. So they started this mammoth criminal conspiracy. And I'll tell you how big the conspiracy was. On February, right after the Benitesh had been identified at Kuala Lumpur, Safan flies over to talk to the joint source and to give him the photograph that he had gotten from the Yemeni authorities of Benitesh, the passport photo. when he's showing the photograph to the joint source, the person who we call the handler, the CI handler for the joint source, is from the Pakistan CI station, and he knew, A, that there'd been a meeting in Kuala Lumpur, B, that Midhar had been at the meeting, and C, that the photograph of Benitez had been identified from that meeting. And yet the Pakistan CIA station never tells Safwan anything. The Yemeni station, who this information was sent back to, that Benitez had been identified in the Kuala Lumpur photo, goes to the Yemeni station. Yemeni station never gives any official response back to Safwan. And the CIA bin Laden unit, who now knows that Benitez and Midhar and Hazmi had been at the meeting planning the co-bombing, never tells Safwan anything. Now, all those actions are criminal. They're criminal obstruction of an ongoing FBI criminal investigation into the murder of 17 U.S. sailors. And this is all covered over by the 9/11 Commission and even by the DOJ IG investigator, Glenn Fine, in his report, his DOJ IG report. And but it's even worse than that. In April, Safwan asked the CIA again, and instead of going through the Yemeni station or the Pakistan station, sent the request directly to the CIA. Now, before that, in November of 2000, since he hadn't gotten any response from the Yemeni station, he asked Louis Free, the director of the FBI, if Free would ask the CIA and make an official request to the CIA for any information that the CIA had on Benitez and or on this meeting in Kuala Lumpur. Now, this is an official request from an FBI investigator, Ali Safwan, to the director of the FBI, intended to be sent back to the director of the CIA. Well, Safwan was told that the CIA had none of this information, had no information on any meeting, and had no information on Walad Benitez, when in fact they obviously had the photograph of Benitez, and it had the fact that both Midhar and Hazmi had been photographed with Benitez at that meeting. Now, what's amazing, if you look at page 181 of the 9/11 Commission report, it says this information had been given to Louis Free. And if you look at the page 238 and 239 of the DOJ IG report, it says that the NSA had also given this information to Louis Free, and that this information ended up in Louis Free's daily briefing on January 4th, 2000. So now what does that tell you? It tells you that Louis Free knew about the meeting, knew that at least three people were going to the meeting. He didn't know their last names, but he knew the first name was Khalid, the second person was Narwath, and the third person was Salim, thought to be Narwath's brother. They were going to an important Al-Qaeda planning meeting. And he knew that this information about this meeting existed at the CIA, and yet Safwan is told in November of 2000 that the CIA has none of this information. And what does that mean? It means that the director of the FBI had criminally obstructed his own investigation into the co-bombing. Now, if that doesn't make the hair stand up on the back of your neck, I don't know what else does.
Well, didn't you tell us on an earlier program that Louis Free had prior knowledge of the 9/11 attack and didn't tell the president? What was that about?
No, that was George Tenet.
George Tenet, okay.
Now, what had actually happened is on August 22nd, Margaret Gillespie, an FBI agent at the Bin Laden unit at the CIA headquarters, found out that Midhar and Hazmi were in the United States. Now, that's on August 22nd. Now, here's what's even more horrible. So she takes that information to Tom Wilshire and Dean of Corsi. Tom Wilshire was a CIA officer who had been moved over to the FBI, and he was actually a deputy director of what's called the ITOS unit at the FBI, working for Michael Rowlands. Corsi is in the Bin Laden unit, which is a unit right next to where Wilshire had been moved. Now, Wilshire had been part of the Bin Laden unit in the CIA. Now, what's amazing is, like I say, I was getting into this. What had happened in April is Safwan sent the same request to the CIA, and just after the request to the CIA went into the CIA headquarters, asking for any information on Walad Benitez and any meeting about a meeting in Kuala Lumpur, Wilshire gets moved over from the CIA to the FBI. And the first thing he does when he moves into the FBI is he contacts Dina Corsi and has her set up a meeting with the FBI co-bombing investigators and present three photographs of Midhar and Hazmi taken at Kuala Lumpur to the co-bombing investigators. And one of Wilshire's former employees, Clark Shannon, asks Steve Bongard, who is Ali Safwan's assistant in New York, do you recognize anybody in the photographs? And when Bongard says, well, who are these people and what have they got to do with the co-bombing and why are you asking us? We're the co-bombing investigators. Clark Shannon says, we can't tell you, and Dina Corsi says, we can't tell you. Dina Corsi was the FBI agent at FBI headquarters. Now, at the time, I found out that Dean Acorsi already knew that Willard Benitesh had been at the meeting, knew that Midhar and Hazmi had been at the meeting, knew the people in the photographs were Midhar and Hazmi, and that they'd taken part in the planning of the co-bombing. So when Bongard is asking this question directly of the CIA and FBI headquarters, they all knew that the people in the photographs had taken part in the planning of the co-bombing. They knew that Bongard was in charge of the co-bombing investigation in the United States, and they refused to give him the information. Again, that's more criminal obstruction. But going out to August 22nd, and August 22nd, Margaret Gillespie found that Midhar and Hazmi were in the U.S., and takes this information back to Tom Wilshire and Corsi, the two people who'd set up that meeting on June 11th, which had been a criminal obstruction of the co-bombing investigation. And the first thing that Wilshire and Corsi did is they took the investigation of Midhar and Hazmi away from Gillespie, gave it to Corsi, and Corsi and Wilshire were going to write up this EC to start an investigation of Midhar and Hazmi. But they didn't want the investigation to go to Bongard, because they knew if the investigation went to Bongard, and he found the photographs of Midhar and Hazmi taken at Kuala Lumpur, along with a photograph of Willard Benitesh, he would have realized immediately that the CIA and the FBI headquarters had criminally obstructed his investigation, and half of the CIA and probably the whole top of the, half of the FBI would have gone to prison forever for having criminally obstructed the investigation of the co-bombing. So what they did, they wanted to start an investigation in the intelligence unit and keep the investigation away from Bongard and his team. So on August 22nd, as soon as they, Wilshire and Corsi are told that Midhar and Hazmi are in the U.S., they contact the head of the intelligence unit at the FBI New York office, a guy called Craig DiNicci, and they said, we need to start an investigation, intelligence investigation of Midhar and Hazmi, and it has to be in an urgent. This is urgent. And DiNicci says, hey, look, it looks like these guys were part of the co-bombing investigation. Why shouldn't this go to the co-bombing investigators? And they said, well, it shouldn't. And we need to start an intelligence investigation right away. And as soon as Corsi was told that the investigation would be an intelligence investigation, she sent an email back off to Wilshire and said, the investigation of Midhar and Hazmi will be done by the intelligence unit. And like I say, what they were trying to do is keep the investigation away from Bongard and his team of criminal investigators to keep themselves out of prison for having criminally obstructed Bongard's investigation, not once, but multiple times.
Oh, but, Bob, how does this fit into prior knowledge, in any way does it fit into prior knowledge of the September 11th attack? Didn't
very simple.
Attorney George Tenet know well, the attack
even,
was
it's even,
coming?
It's even more horrible than that. Because on July 23, and I have on my website, which is www.events.on911.com, I have on my website email from Wilshire back to his bosses at the CIA. Now, this email was on July 23, 2001. That was less than 1 month ahead of when Wilshire was told Midhar and Hazmi were in the U.S. And it says that Khalid El-Midhar will be found at the point of the next big Al-Qaeda operation. And on July 5th, which is just a few weeks before that, Wilshire sends an email back and says he thinks the people of Kuala Lumpur, which included Midhar, Hazmi, and Hazmi's brother, will be are connected to the warnings of the huge attack. Since April of 2001, the CIA and FBI headquarters had been receiving warnings of a gigantic terrorist attack that the CIA thought would kill thousands of Americans. In fact, these warnings were so severe and so persistent that on July 10th, George Tenet, Kofor Black, his mentor at the CIA, and Richard Blee, and probably nobody has ever heard of the name Richard Blee, he was head of the Bin Laden unit, he was Wilshire's direct boss, go over to the White House, call up Rice as they're driving over to the White House and say, we need to have an urgent meeting with you and Richard Clark. And they told Richard Clark and Condoleezza Rice on July 10th, there's going to be a gigantic attack. It's going to take place inside the United States. It's going to kill thousands of Americans. Now, at this time, the CIA knew that Narif al-Hazmi was in the United States and knew that Khalid al-Midhar had a multi-entry visa for the United States.
And, of course, these are people who were supposedly on the planes that hit the...
They were on American 77 that hit the Pentagon.
Involved that morning's attack, right?
Yes, they were on American 77 that hit the Pentagon.
Okay.
You can imagine that, along with Salim al-Hazmi, Narif's brother. So on August 22nd, when Wilshire and Corsi are told that Midhar and Hazmi are in the U.S., they both know, or at least Wilshire knows immediately, that these people are in the U.S. for no other reason than to take part in this gigantic attack. And on August 23, Margaret Gillespie is allowed to force, she had to force the Bin Laden unit at the CIA to release a worldwide alert for Midhar and Hazmi. Now, the Bin Laden unit was headed by Richard Blee, so Blee would have known this, And he would have given it to Copper Black, and Copper Black would have given known this and given it to George Tenet. Now, here's the horrible part. I went to the 9/11 hearings, and when Tim Romer asked Tenet, he said, George, you knew there was a gigantic attack inside the United States in August of 2000, and one that would kill thousands of Americans. He said, yes, I did. So what did you tell the president? Oh, I didn't tell him anything. And why is that? And he said, because the president's in Crawford, and I'm in Washington. And then
well,
Romer said,
Fifth, what it's really all about is plausible denial. So the
oh, it's even worse than that. The answers were so stupid. Nobody ever told me. Oh, you know, it was worse than that. He said, I knew there was a huge attack, but George Bush is in Washington, or in Crawford, I'm in Washington. And then he said, well, why didn't you pick up the phone? And Tenet said, oh, I didn't pick up the phone, and I can't give you any explanation why I didn't pick up the phone. And I'm sitting there listening to this. I was listening.
These people knew the attack was coming. They left the people there to die. They knew the
World Trade Center. Oh, they just left them there to die, and it's even worse than that. Hmm?
They knew the World Trade Center was the target.
Oh, it was just—it was hideous. And so here Tenet tells Tim Romer that I didn't pick up the phone, and I can't tell you why. Well, Bill Harlow, who's the spokesman for the CIA, came out that afternoon or the next day and said, oh, Tenet must have misspoke. He didn't say he lied when he actually lied. He said Tenet was in Crawford on the 17th of August to talk to the president and talk to the president on the 31st of August when George Bush flew back to
Washington.
Well,
we'll be back here in just a moment with Bob Chalmeyer talking on his book, and when we get back, we'll tell you how to get it.
Clean Dirt Grains and Seeds would like to say that many area parents feel frightened or somewhat intimidated to talk openly with their children about drug abuse. Parents, remember that open communication with your children along with love and understanding can in fact be the most effective weapon in the war against drugs in our community. You are the most important person in your child's life. Teach them to just say no to drugs. That important message probably brought to you by Clean Dirt Grains and Seeds in Sterling. They're another local concerned and involved business working towards a better community for all. That's Clean Dirt Grain and Seeds on the air because they care. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of the light. That was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 6 through 9. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of the Green Herb.
Is it me, or have you noticed that personal service is becoming a thing of the past? Is a big store with untrained personnel, or going to a vitamin store and finding several brands of the same herbal product, all at different prices? You don't need to be an herbal expert at the Green Herb. We'll gladly help you decide which of the Green Herb's exclusive products will work for you and work better than anything you buy elsewhere. And we'll give you an old-fashioned money-back guarantee. Come by the Green Herb, located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB, that's 888-765-4372, or go to our website at www.thegreenherb.com. It's the Green Herb's policy to give you small-town service in the big city, and be sure to listen to the Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque or reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Article 1, Section 10.
The American Freedom Network is not funded or supported by special interest groups or government programs. The American Freedom Network is not sponsored by advertisers demanding content or programming control. The American Freedom Network is solely funded by you, the listener. Please help keep the American Freedom Network on the air by purchasing one of our sponsors' fine products or by calling 1-800-205-6245 to make a donation. The American Freedom Network needs your help.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here, our guest this morning. Bob, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get your book, Where they can get
they go to www.events on 9/11, and that's events on 9/11, and 9/11 are just two numbers, 9/11. There's no dashes, no hyphens, no nothing, just www.eventson911.com. They not only can get my book, but I also have much of the documentation, and I'll explain what the documentation is in a second here.
Now,
the
is documentation that on, is that on the website?
The documentation is actually on the website. I have one document called DE-939, which was a defense exhibit entered in the Massawi trial on March 11, 2006. And that document is the email that Wilshire sent back to his bosses at the CIA, Blee, Black, and probably Tenet, that says Midhar will be found at the point of the next big Al-Qaeda operation. Can you goddamn imagine that? There's the document right there. And it furthermore says that Margaret Gillespie, Mary, a.k.a. Mary, gave the information that Midhar and Hazmi were in the U.S. to Wilshire and Corsi. Now, of course, they've got their aliases in there, and I've identified all of them via their aliases. Gave that information to Midhar and Corsi on August 22nd. So to continue on with the story, Corsi writes up an EC. An EC is an electronic communication to start an intelligence investigation for Midhar and Hazmi. Now, when she called Craig Domenici on August 22nd, who was the head of the intelligence unit, she said it was absolutely urgent they start this investigation, and it was clear what they wanted to do. They wanted to get an intelligence investigation going and tell Bongart, well, you couldn't do it. We're going to give it to the intelligence unit. Well, on the 28th, the EC comes over, and it goes to a guy called John Ligori, who is in charge of distributing these ECs to the people inside the New York office, and he accidentally sends it to Steve Bongart. So Bongard calls up Corsi and says, hey, look, it looks like this guy was part of the coal-bombing investigation or coal-bombing attack. I need to investigate this guy. Now, can you imagine this? Corsi tells Bongard that he can't investigate this because the information comes from the NSA, and the NSA has a caveat at the bottom of their documents that say this information cannot be given to FBI criminal investigators without a written release from the NSA. Now, that's put on there because the information could have come from an FISA warrant. And an FISA warrant says that you can get a search warrant if you have probable cause the person who is the target of the investigation is a terrorist. But what you need if you go into a court of law, you need probable cause that the person has committed a crime or is about to commit a crime. So the burden of proof for an FISA warrant is less, and the NSA didn't want people to take this information and then find that the trial for a criminal defendant was destroyed because they'd used the wrong information from a search warrant. So they put this caveat on everything they wrote. Now, here's the problem. So Corsi tells Bongart that he can't investigate Midhar and Hazmi because this information came from the NSA, and she was on the phone with a guy called Rod Middleton, her boss. Well, here's the problem. She had already gotten the release from the NSA on August 27th, the day before, and the release says this information on Midhar and Hazmi and on the Kuala Lumpur meeting can be given to the criminal investigators in New York City. So the day she tells Bongart that he's not allowed to investigate this, she'd already gotten a release.
Now, who now, is Bongart? Is he with FBI? Who is he?
She was at FBI headquarters in the Bin Laden unit. And apparently she was working with Tom Wilshire, the CIA officer, who'd come over from the CIA and was now working as a deputy chief at the ITOS unit. And what's the ITOS unit? That was a unit headed by Michael Rowlands that was in charge of all criminal investigations in the world. They could literally shut down any investigation they wanted by just simply coming up with phony excuses. They shut down Harry Sammet's investigation of Zacharias Massawi by telling Sammet that he couldn't get any search warrant because they couldn't connect Khattab to Bin Laden. Well, if you can imagine this, I just described the name Rod Middleton. Well, Middleton wrote up in April of 2001 the threat report that said Khattab and Bin Laden are threatening to carry out an attack on the United States and connected Khattab directly to Bin Laden. And yet Michael Rowlands and Dave Fresca, two people at the ITOS unit in the RFU unit, told Harry Sammet, you're not allowed to get any search warrant because we can't connect Khattab to any known terrorist organization. So they were using every excuse they could to shut down every single investigation of any al-Qaeda terrorist found inside the United States.
And you have to ask yourself why, knowing the attack is coming, are they shutting down the investigation?
Well, I found that out. I found out that the reason at least Corsi and Wilshire were shutting down these investigations were because they thought they were going to end up in prison forever, and half the CIA was going to end up in prison. Now, the information went to Richard Lee.
Why would they be sent to prison?
because they had criminally obstructed the criminal investigation of the co-bombing investigators multiple times. The meeting in New York City on June 11th had been a criminal obstruction of the co-bombing investigation. When Bongard had asked, who are these people and what have they got to do with the co-bombing investigation, and both Corsi and Clark Shannon, who was Wilshire's protege, knew directly that Midhar and Hazmi had been at the Kuala Lumpur meeting with Willad Benitez planning the co-bombing. And, in fact, so did Tom Wilshire. And Wilshire didn't show up at that meeting. And what the CIA was trying to do, they took over these groups at the CIA, and the two groups they took over were the director of the FBI, the Louis Free, and the ITOS unit. And they used these units to shut down investigations to make sure these investigations never went to criminal investigators. And now it's not entirely clear why they shut down Harry Sammet's investigation, But I think the reason they shut that down is that if they thought if that investigation got serious, then it would fire up the investigation of Steve Bongard and light a fire under his investigation, and then he would realize that they had a photograph of Benitez, they had a photograph of Midhar and Hazmi at the Kuala Lumpur meeting, and that he had been criminally obstructed over and over and over when he had made requests to the CIA. And that's why both the 9/11 Commission and the DOJ-IG report left Safon completely out. The only way you find Safon is in the documentation from Lawrence Wright, an author who wrote a book called Looming Tower, which won the Pulitzer Prize in 2006, and it talks about Safon. And, in fact, I'd finished my book in 2006 in spring, saw the article. There was an article in The New Yorker on July 10th, and I realized, well, the article has to have information that's going to apply to my book. Because at the time I wrote the book, I had all these questions. Well, why didn't the CIA give the FBI information here, and why didn't they give them information there? And can you imagine that? That article answered almost all my questions. The only additional questions that I needed were the absolute proof that the CIA had criminally carried out these things, had criminally obstructed Bongard's investigation. And here's the horrible part. When Corsi and Shannon are shutting down Bongard's investigation, they know that literally thousands of Americans are going to die in these attacks because Bongard isn't going to be unable to prevent this huge attack. And here's the even more horrible part. Wilshire was blocked on July 13th and July 23 when he sent email back to his bosses, Richard Blee, Kofor Black, and George Tenet, asking for permission to give the information on Kuala Lumpur and Midhar and Hazmi to the FBI criminal investigators on the co-bombing.
Well, now, what is, give the our listeners the title to your book so they'll know how.
Prior Knowledge of 9/11. The horrible part is they not only let it happen, they made sure it was going to happen. Now, I just told you that, of course, he had already gotten the release from the NSA when she tells Bongard, Steve Bongard, that he can't investigate because she doesn't have the release. Now, it's even worse than that. So Bongard tells Corsi. And this is actually, this is in document 0681 and DE0682. These are the emails between Corsi and Bongard. So Bongard tells Corsi, well, look, these guys are connected to the co-bombing. Why do you think they're in the United States? Do you think they're going to effing Disneyland? And she says, I don't care. And so he said, look, I don't think this information from the NSA has anything to do with an NSA or with an FISA warrant. Check with the legal people and see what they say. And she
All
comes
right,
back
we'll
on
be the back in just a moment, Bob.
Okay.
Hang on to that thought there.
Tax problems, IRS notices, credit card debt. Get professional help from local attorney Chelsea Victor at 303-702-0591. The Law Office of Chelsea Victor provides affordable, compassionate, and professional representation. Call today for a free initial consultation. The Law Office of Chelsea Victor, redefining legal representation one client at a time. That's 303-702-0591, 303-702-0591.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
Zay
Abel Construction is a family-owned and operated business. They're able to handle the big jobs and the small ones, from additions and remodels to decks and drywall. Over 45 years of combined experience, they're reliable and trustworthy. For a free estimate, email them at zabelconstruction@hotmail.com. That's Z-A-B-E-L construction@hotmail.com, or call Mark at 303-579-5325. Licensed and insured, Zabel Construction.
For the finest in home security, you want Fine Line Security, a family-owned business. They install, service, and repair any CCTV system, including DVRs. Free estimates are available. Free security evaluations, including existing systems, emergency repairs, and loaner equipment. Call Scott at 303-550-8202. They also have lease options available for CCTV security. Always professional, neat, and excellent workmanship. Home automation wireless solution for doors and driveways also available. 303-550-8202. Fine Line Security.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's very obvious that they knew the attack was coming. They knew when the attack was coming. You remember the morning of the attack, why we were told that 6,000 Americans had died. And yes, they repeated that all during that day, and the following day, 6,000 Americans died. Why did they think 6,000 people died?
Well, I had been at a demo in Lowell, Massachusetts. I had been at my... I'd been to my hotel, which was Marriott in Newton, Massachusetts, and I drove up to Lowell, and they came running in and said the attack had happened, and I thought, oh, my God, it's my fault. I knew about the attack. I even went through the Logan Airport on the 8th, which was Saturday, looking for the hijackers, thinking they'd be in front of the security points. And I was sure they'd be there because I couldn't imagine they'd be out there trying to carry out this huge attack without checking to figure out how to get their knives through security. You didn't see them. And for a few hours decided they might have put the attack off for a week or two. That was on Saturday night. Well, Sunday I came to the conclusion they hadn't put it off, that it was going to take place the next week. And so I'm sitting there thinking in the demo, I was demoing my software, thinking, oh, my God, I just killed all those people. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I had just, our meeting had been canceled because of this attack in New York, so I invited everybody over for breakfast. As soon as they set the breakfast dinners down, all of a sudden, the buildings were coming down on a TV right in front of us, and I was just so sick, I was about to throw up on the table. And I said, guys, I'll pay for it, I'm out of here. And there were like 30 people at the demo. Raced home, got on the TV, turned it on.
Now,
here's Rudy Giuliani. He said he thought 7,000 people had been killed. And I'm sitting here thinking,
what?
He said he thought 7,000 people had been killed. Now, this was from Rudy Giuliani. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my God, I just killed 7,000 people. It's my fault. And then I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, well, why the hell is it all my fault? Doesn't the CIA and FBI think they're partly responsible, too? And I said, oh, my God, they're just layers and layers of these goddamn brain-dead idiots. They probably didn't have a clue. And I realized later on that they did. Now, to get back to my story, remember when I told you that Corsi had the release when she tells Bongard she doesn't? Well, he asked her to go to the NSLU. And she comes back on August 29th and tells Bongart that the attorneys at the NSLU have ruled he's not allowed to be part of this investigation. But I found the testimony from Sherry Sable, who was the attorney, is actually in the 9/11 Commission report on page 538, footnote 81. And it says, Sherry Sable, the attorney, tells Corsi that since the information had nothing to do with an FISA warrant, the same thing that Bongart thought, since it had nothing to do with an FISA warrant, Bongart can be part of any investigation of Minhar and Hazmi. And furthermore, of course, he's confused. She can go to the NSA and get a release herself, unaware she'd gotten the release 2 days before. So she was using criminal, nefarious means to shut down Bongart's investigation, knowing that when she did that, thousands of Americans would perish in these attacks. Now, here's what's even more horrible. On August 30th, the photograph of Walad Benitez comes over to the FBI and goes to Rod Middleton, Corsi's boss. So on the 30th of August, Corsi's boss and Corsi now have photographic proof that Midhar and Hazmi had been at the meeting in Kuala Lumpur planning the co-bombing with Walad Benitesh, and there was no reason at that point why both Corsi and Middleton didn't call up Bongard and say, look, we goofed, we've got the photographic proof. But they let Bongard stew and destroyed his investigation right then and there. In fact, Corsi told Bongard that if one piece of paper ever surfaced at the FBI with his name and Midhar's name, he was out. They were going to fire him. He was going to be destroyed. He would have no pension. He was finished. And now it's even worse than, I mean, it even gets worse than that. So the investigation goes to this guy called Robert Fuller, who was a brand new investigator, had never investigated any intelligence operation at all. In the intelligence unit, And he finds that Mihdhar had flown into the U.S. on July 4th on Saudi Airlines. So he's going to call Saudi Airlines and ask them what his credit card number is, because the FBI has a database called Choice Point that has all these all this information from all these credit cards. So he calls Corsi and says, could he contact Saudi Arabian Airlines to get Mihdhar's credit card number? And Corsi says it would not be prudent for him to contact Saudi Airlines. Now, there is no known reason on planet Earth why she would have told him that other than to destroy his investigation. So on September 11th, when the attack happened, he hadn't gotten anywhere. Had he had Mihdhar's credit card number, he would have identified Mihdhar. He would have identified Hazmi. He probably could have connected Mihdhar and Hazmi to all the people that were on the airplanes that hit the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and the plane that hit the Pennsylvania. They were all connected through credit card numbers.
But they were living, before the attack, they were living in Southern California with an FBI informant. And the FBI,
can you imagine that? Now, I'm not sure what you can make of that, other than that the FBI apparently doesn't know who their informants are. But the guy who is running the informant, this guy, Steve Bench, he has this thing called bona fides. I'm trying to make up the bona fides for my the informant, and he has the exact same thing on what's called the bona fides every year that says this guy is a worthy person and et cetera. And the informant actually told Bench that two people, Khalid and Narif, were his roommates. And he said, and I vouch for them. Even though these people, I said, I don't know much about them, but I vouch for them. They're good Muslims. Now, why would Bench take that at face value? That if this informant didn't know who these people were, why would he vouch for their character?
Well, not only that, but he's helping them at every turn. This is the incredible thing.
Well, I don't know. I wasn't able to connect that, but I was able to connect the FBI headquarters, the CIA, directly to shutting down these investigations when they knew that thousands of Americans would be murdered in these attacks. Now I don't know. I'm a loyal American citizen, and I don't know how many people in this country are just completely disgusted that people inside the U.S. government had deliberately allowed these attacks. And not only that, but that the 9/11 Commission was put together for no other reason than to whitewash this whole thing. And even the DOJ IG report, which I consider to be one of the best reports around, I found that they had fiddled with that report and left important information out of that report. They left Ali Safan completely out of the DOJ IG report, except for one little tiny passage.
Okay, well, we're out of time, Bob. I want to thank you so much. You've done a great job of compiling a tremendous amount of information that people have not
had before. It kind of makes me sick. I wish I hadn't done it. I wish somebody else had done it, but God almighty, I mean, as a country, we've got to just be disgusted with what had happened here.
We certainly do. They knew the attack was coming. They left the people to die. The loudspeaker system in the South Tower was telling people not to get up and leave. And fortunately, the man in charge of security there at Morgan Stanley ran up and down the aisles with a megaphone saying, get out, we're under attack. He got 2,500 people out. Had they been there, why, the figure would have been very close to 6,000.
Oh, yeah, and he was unfortunate. He was killed in this huge attack.
He was eventually killed. He went back.
That was Rick Roscorla. And not only that, but now I knew the attack was going to take place. Guess who else knew it was going to take place? Rick Roscorla knew it was going to take place. He didn't know exactly when, but he thought that the buildings would be attacked with hijacked airplanes. And guess who else knew that? John O'Neill, who was also killed on 9/11.
Hey, thanks very much. God bless. Appreciate you being with us.
Well, Stan, nice to be on your show. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Article 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
Sick of playing the guessing game with your vitamins? Tired of paying hundreds or even thousands of dollars for supplements that may or may not work? If you're a professional athlete or just looking for nutritional peace of mind, look no more, because you've found Bio Superfood, the next generation in supplementation. 100% natural Bio Superfood packs all your essential proteins, vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, enzymes, and many of nature's special forces you need for optimum health. Call BioAge at 877-288-9116, 877-288-9116.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots biblically based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat and Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom. Good Sabbath.
Tax problems, IRS notices, credit card debt? Get professional help from local attorney Chelsea Victor at 303-702-0591. The Law Office of Chelsea Victor provides affordable, compassionate, and professional representation. Call today for a free initial consultation. The Law Office of Chelsea Victor, redefining legal representation one client at a time. That's 303-702-0591, 303-702-0591.
Well, I just stand back here at the American Freedom Network, and Sydney, I hope you enjoyed it. Bob's book, it has just a lot of good information, ties it all together to the fact they knew the attack was coming, they didn't try to stop it. And, of course, we actually carry the book by Robert Baer. It's called See No Evil. And in the preface to the book, he quotes one of the highest-ranking CIA officials who told a reporter off the record, when the dust finally clears after 9-1-1, the American people will realize that this was a triumph for the intelligence agencies, not a failure. When the dust finally clears after 9-1-1, the public will realize what happened was a triumph for intelligence, not a failure. Well, 3,000 Americans died that morning. 6,000 were supposed to die, but fortunately they got the people out of Morgan Stanley. How could that be a triumph? Why, it got us into the war in Afghanistan. It got us into the war in Iraq. And understand, these people think differently. Now, we do have that book. It's a very important book written by a CIA agent who worked in Kurdistan in Iraq all during the 1990s. And as he points out, he never met an Iraqi who didn't believe this American government was keeping Saddam Hussein in power. He pointed out how the Iraqi military on several occasions wanted to overthrow Saddam Hussein. And each time they contacted the American government to tell them about the coup, each time they, of course, were betrayed by the American State Department. The people were tortured to death. How could that be? If that's really going on, shouldn't every American know the book? Robert Baer, See No Evil. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Of course, the story, it wasn't simply that they knew the attack was coming down. The buildings were brought down by controlled demolition. And we have a number of DVDs on that. You can get them at our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Or call our 800 number. You can order the special. We have five DVDs, or you can get them individually. But you need to understand that those buildings were brought down by controlled demolition. We actually have several four-tape sets where people were interviewed. Jimmy Walters, who spent $8 million of his own money running ads in the New York Times, New York television stations, $8 million pointing out that the buildings came down by controlled demolition. His life was threatened. He's living in hiding in Europe today. You cannot bring this out. Imagine what would happen if the American people knew that their invisible government had killed those American people. And now they're about to involve us in a war with Iran, ladies and gentlemen. And how many more people will die needlessly? They lied to us about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and 1 million civilians died. They lied to us about the Gulf of Tonkin incident, 58,000 Americans died, but a million South Vietnamese and 2 million North Vietnamese died totally unnecessarily. And what are we doing? We're financing the North Vietnamese government today. That's never given us back all of our prisoners. And remember what Ronald Reagan said, a nation that will betray its fighting men will, of course, betray its citizens, and we abandoned hundreds of American citizens, soldiers in North Vietnam, and certainly in a similar number, probably 1,000 in Laos, and they're still there, at least those who survived, and they realize they've been betrayed because nobody cared. We've got books on the men. We've got a 4-tape set on the men we left behind. It'll make you want to weep. We abandoned them. What are you going to do? Are you going to sit there and do nothing? Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We're financing North Vietnam today. They still have our president. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
For the finest in home security, you want Fine Line Security, a family-owned business. They install, service, and repair any CCTV system, including DVRs. Free estimates are available. Free security evaluations, including existing systems, emergency repairs, and loaner equipment. Call Scott at 303-550-8202. They also have lease options available.